Can I just lean over and prick it?
Okay.
Just have it. Thank you, and I just want to say I really appreciate those of you who are here being here, because I think it's always a challenge when you're assigned the last slot on the last day, so thank you very much. The title of my presentation is Not the Same Old, talking about assignments for students in terms of papers, where we all face those challenges, whether we have undergraduate or graduate students that write papers for us in our particular courses. It can become very mundane after a while. So I'm just going to share with you some of the strategies I use to implement some contemporary readings, different books, into some courses that I'm teaching both at the undergraduate and graduate level. I do have to say, I forgot this is here, that I don't have the slide, but I have no financial disclosure, and I know everybody's been saying that at all their presentations, so I better say that, and I don't. These are some traditional evaluation methods that we're all familiar with. Is my head in the way as I'm standing here? You're right. In terms of examinations, quizzes, researching and doing a synthesis paper, oral presentations, Blackboard assignments of some type, whether it's participating in a discussion board or doing a posting on Blackboard, small group work, assigning points for class participation, and either other assignments that I failed to mention here. Oh, I'm going the wrong way. The challenges associated are found for both educators and students alike. Educators are trying to oftentimes come up with some new strategy to present for writing assignments, and often coming into the conflicts that sometimes arise where you feel that you've read this paper before. And so maybe a student has recycled it from a previous course or from a previous student to student, and yet sometimes it's very hard to then actually come up with an action plan strategy to not sound accusatory, but yet to come up with something that's equitable and fair in terms of the way you grade that. And also the way that papers are now showing up on the internet, where students can even pay for papers and get a scholarly writing sample off of the internet. So these are challenges that maybe we weren't faced with if we've been in nursing education for a while and assigned papers 10, 15 years ago. Reflective practice is actually something that Christopher Johns has written extensively on. I was fortunate enough to have attended a workshop that he presented when I worked in Philadelphia at LaSalle University. Our dean was savvy enough to find out that he was in the United States, because he is from England, and he is a guru on reflective practice. I did bring his book along, Becoming a Reflective Practitioner. It's a second edition. He focuses a lot in this book on clinical reflective practice, not so much on didactic. But he was in the United States about 3 years ago for another type of presentation. So she was able to get him to come to LaSalle and do a two-day workshop for us, which 6 hours each day, which was wonderful. It was a staff development type of event that we had over the summer, and faculty even came in and attended on their quote-unquote time off, those of us that were on nine-month contracts. But it was really very enlightening and encouraging to hear his thoughts on reflective practice. His definition is describing reflection as being mindful of self, either within or after an experience, in order to confront, understand, and move towards resolving contradiction between one's vision and actual practice. Reflective writing in nursing courses augments standard assignments for papers by promoting both reflection and critical thinking for the students. The benefits that I found for non-nursing literature is you can find literature out there that will complement a traditional textbook. For the undergraduate community public health course that I teach, they have use of a traditional book. We use Stanhope and Lancaster, but I know there are many other books out there. But a book like this, written by Leonard Cole, that's titled The Anthrax Letters, actually allows them to read about the events that happened in the fall of 2001 and the nation's response to the Anthrax Bioterrorism Act. There are other books that I don't have with me because I didn't want to load down my suitcase too much, but such as Fast Food Nation, and one other book that I just found over the summer and assigned this spring, this fall, is by Jimmy Santiago Baga, and it's A Place to Stand. And he actually came to Philadelphia to speak at a lecture called the Bridging the Gaps Symposium. So we actually took all the students from DeSales, the senior students who read his book this fall on September 12th. We went down to Drexel School of Medicine and heard him tell his life story and what led him to write this book with his upbringing of very vulnerable family, a lot of violence in the family and the neighborhood he lived in, causing him to drop out of school and then create a life for himself that was not favorable with drugs and violence, where he ended up being incarcerated for a period of time, where then he earned his GED and started actually working with other prisoners to help them rise above, you know, their challenges. So now that's what he does. He goes out and he gives motivational speaking engagements in middle schools and high school, primarily to urban youth of color, to try and help them not go down the same path that he went down. But he started writing poetry in prison, and that's what's included in some of his writings in this book. So I believe that it helps the students see the bigger picture, and reflection upon non-nursing literature promotes critical thinking about how nursing and public health actually intersect. This is just some examples that I've used in the courses that I've taught both at LaSalle and at DeSales. I already mentioned the Anthrax Letters and Jimmy Baca's book for the undergraduate public health nursing course. There was also an undergraduate urban health elective course that I taught, and the book used there was Mama Might Be Better Off Dead. And it was written in 1994, but actually when you read the chronology of this family, who really was very much the way an urban family is. This was a Chicago family, but you find these families throughout the nation where it was a mom who actually had to care for her grandmother, and then she had her own children. She had a husband that was in and out of her life, and he was drug addicted and that type of thing. So even though it's an older book written in 94, many of the same things that are in that book are still happening today, where the grandmother needed to be transported to the hospital and Medicare wouldn't pay for the ambulance. I'm sorry, to the doctor's office, and Medicare wouldn't pay. But then when her condition with diabetes got so bad that she had to go to the ER, they could get an ambulance and things of that nature. So I think it's still relevant. The Tipping Point by Gladwell I use in graduate epidemiology, and the students are really astounded. Many of them haven't even heard the phrase the tipping point before, and they really are very surprised at how Gladwell's work, comparing things like the sale of hush puppy shoes and how it really dwindled, where hush puppies was almost going out of business, and then all of a sudden there was this upsurge in sales of hush puppies and how that created the tipping point for the company, and then talking about other things related to health in that book. And then A Theory of Everything, which I have up here, that is actually written by Ken Wilber, and I use it for a graduate nursing theories course, because what he proposes is that there's too many theories out there. There's business, economics, math, health. We all have our theories, and he's combined it all into A Theory of Everything. So this book is pretty abstract, and the grad students have a little bit of trouble getting their hands around it initially, but as you get to the later chapters, it becomes a little easier to comprehend, and they can tie it into the nursing theorists that they're reading about. The student feedback I've received from both the RMBSN and the graduate students have more trepidation in it than the traditional undergrads. The traditional undergrads seem to be able to pick up the ball with a book that's assigned to them, such as contemporary reading, and go with the flow a little bit easier. In-class inquiries, though, come up with all the groups, whether they're undergrads or graduate students, and they have questions about how to write in first person, because oftentimes their writing assignments to date have adhered to APA style, and they have some fears about reflective writing. Questions regarding the grading rubric that I provide to them, and I do have a sample one to share with you. And statements regarding feeling uncomfortable about giving their personal reflections, but then I reassure them that I'm the one that's reading their paper. I'm not going to share it. I'm not going to post it anywhere. I'm not going to pass it around to faculty or other students. So that seems to settle them down a little bit. But after they submit the paper and on final course evaluations, I really have gotten feedback that's 360 away from that. There's a feeling not only of relief that they completed the assignment, but they have a pride and accomplishment of being able to do so, and also statements regarding how the book selection relates to either nursing practice, education, and research, and that they would recommend the book that they had to read in class to a colleague. So I would ask you to contemplate what courses you think contemporary readings might be able to augment and where it would be a good fit. And you could search. The way I found The Theory of Everything last winter was just going onto Amazon and typing in the word theory and getting a bunch of hits. And many of the books were geared strictly for the business world. But this one did include areas related to medicine and health. So that's why I chose this. And before you even buy the book, many of the Amazon books that I was able to look at, they allowed you at least look at the table contents online so you could see with some of the chapter titles if they sounded like it might work for you. And then devising a grading rubric based upon your course objectives. And I would encourage you to go ahead, if you're not already doing this, taking the plunge and using a contemporary book for one semester, and then after that semester either maintaining that book or moving on and finding another one that you might think would be more suitable. I actually did not assign Anthrax Letters this fall because of the gentleman that they purport was the anthrax perpetrator killing himself over the summer. And now I find that part of the heightened awareness in this book was, you know, we still don't know who this person is. He or she might be out there and might do it again. And if this person, and his name escapes me right now, but it really doesn't matter, was the one that did instigate the whole thing, I just thought maybe it'd be better to look for something else. And the grading rubric that I use for epidemiology, the tipping point, I think that's the one I have here for you. That's what it says on the slide, but for some reason I'm thinking I put the rubric for this, but let me see. This is the overall intro to the rubric, that you're going to analyze and read this book and answer the following questions in a reflective paper. You have to use APA style for the title page, the reference page, and you have to have correct grammar and spelling in the assignment, but reflective writing is what I'm looking for, so using first person is fine. There's no need to include any abstract tables, graphs, or figures, and then I bold this part. It's understood that the instructor has already read this book, then therefore a synopsis is not necessary, because the first time I assigned reflective reading, I found that students spent about 2 pages giving an overview at the beginning and not really jumping in and answering the questions. Now, this font might be a little small. How am I on time, Sheree? I'm okay? But what I wrote here is that 3 rules of the tipping point are presented in Chapter 1, and the author proposes that these rules offer a way to make sense of epidemics. So based upon your knowledge of epidemiologic concept, choose one rule. Like, I didn't want them to write about all 3 rules, but choose one that they think is paramount and include your rationale. Then in Chapter 6, a needle exchange program in Baltimore is highlighted, and I give them the page numbers, 203 to 206. What ethical conflicts are present when a needle exchange program such as this exists? And boy, did I get some good responses on that one. And then I give them a choice for themselves. In the next bullet, I talk about in Chapter 7 what goes on in the book, and in Chapter 8, and I tell them just pick one of these questions to answer. So in Chapter 7, the author discusses smoking and differentiates between chippers, people who kind of smoke on and off, and hardened smokers. So based upon epidemiologic concepts, does the author make valid conclusions about what he has to say about this addictive behavior and cite pages of the book that support your answer? Or they could choose in Chapter 8, a Band-Aid solution, on page 256, and talk about any public health issue that you want to talk about. And that's all right. Let me just find it again. And what you might consider to be a Band-Aid solution to that public health issue, and name 2 solutions to the issue that you might consider comprehensive solutions, and based upon epidemiologic concept, what solutions may result in improved incidence and prevalence data in the long term, like 5 to 10 years out, and include the rationale. And the last bullet is the afterword. The author describes the epidemic of gun violence, and I have them apply a web of causation. They don't actually have to draw one out, but they have to list like concepts that would be found in a web of causation for gun violence. And lastly, your opinion and a closing commentary regarding the application of a contemporary reading such as this book to a graduate course in epidemiology. So this has been tweaked over the semesters, but basically this is where it is right now. And I'm just wanted to know if you're using any books, what you're using, because you could give me some insight. And I was hoping that if you weren't, maybe after this discussion, you might consider adopting a contemporary book. I'm sorry, your hand went up first. Great application. Your hand was up. Oh yeah, And You Fall Down. Yes, for cultural competency, that's a great book. Okay, great. And Liz. I'm not familiar with that book. Thank you very much. I would just like to close to read something at the end of Christopher John's book, Teaching Through Reflective Practice. Reflective teaching is opening both the student and the teacher to imagination, creativity, and possibility. The teacher must let go of the life raft of control flow with what is unfolding to surf the waves. It's okay to be thrown from time to time. Becoming a master requires practice, vulnerability, humility, and courage. If we who teach this ask of our students, then we must ask this of ourselves. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mary Ellen.